Coming up, it's Counterculture with Marie Buskey. A look into the world of critical social justice, woke culture, and more on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio with me. Now, Marie, hello, good morning, is Buck Angel from Los Angeles. Buck has a message of empowerment through self-acceptance and the mission to encourage everyone to be comfortable in their own skin. Good morning, Buck. How are you?
Oh, good afternoon from Los Angeles. How are you?
I'm very well. So right. How did you get to a place of empowerment and comfortable in your own skin?
Well, I guess I stopped caring what people thought about me, seriously. And it's like a very empowering space. Once you really just realize you're not going to change everybody else, you can only change yourself. That became sort of my superpower on some level. And that's what I try to teach the world at this point. You can't change everybody, but you can change yourself.
So your journey, though, to that self-empowerment is not everybody's journey. So tell us a little bit about that, because here on this show, we talk to a lot of people within the trans space, both transsexual, transgender, and those fighting for women's rights, especially. Now, you fall, what I would call in the old camp of transsexual, you're sort of in the OG section of the department, Buck. So talk about our listeners through that.
So I am 62 years old. I'm a biological female, and I transitioned to live my life as a male 32 years ago. And what I mean by that is I haven't changed my sex, which is now this new thing that you can change your sex. That's just not possible. That's not how you transition. So, and with that, I really walked the world in a space of looking like a man. People listening to this, you won't be able to see me, but if you Google or whatever, you'll see I'm just a man. I'm just a female that looks like a man on some level. And what that means for me is that I found that space that I'm able to now walk in and alongside with you. And why I say transsexual is that I don't want to be separate from you. I made an effort to look like a man, to walk like a man, or whatever that even means on some level, and to participate in the world as a quote unquote male. But I never forgot that I'm still female. And so I think transsexual people like myself get diagnosed with gender dysphoria. We go through a system. We make an effort to look like males or females. We don't want to take your space. You know, I don't want you to force to be call me a he. If you still want to call me a she, that's okay. And I really come to it in a space of nuance, in a space of, hey, let's just get along. My gender dysphoria was horrible, and it really didn't make me a good person. And I don't think anybody would want me to be that person. They would want me to be this person. And so by showing the difference between somebody who acknowledges my dysphoria and acknowledges my sort of mental, situation, that enables people to have a little more compassion for me, as opposed to me forcing my beliefs on you.
That's the nuance. I mean, you live in California. Yeah. I mean, you, yeah. That nuance all of a sudden, I think, has been lost. I mean, it's more about sort of brickbats than bouquets these days, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, California is really insane. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I was born and raised here. I love it. I lived in Mexico for 10 years of my life. But that being said, I came back to California because the people here are great. It's our governing body that's horrible. We've gone off the deep end in whatever you want to call liberalism. I'm a kind of a liberal person at heart, to be honest with you. I think when you get older, your views do change and you become a little more conservative leaning. And now I'm a dad, I have a kid, and I have a partner and all of these things. But that being said, California's just gotten really insane with this sort of, you know, I think here, I don't know if you call it there, we call it woke, where it's gone seriously like wing nutty left and not in any nuance. I live in a nuanced space.
Yeah, well, no, New Zealand is very like California, but I think sometimes we even go a little bit further left than you. So I'm completely there than where you're at. So to that nuanced space, though, the whole movement of trans has sort of gone from people trying to figure out where they fit in the world to this ideological and political absolute driving machine. You come up against that all the time. How do you combat that when people make a visual assumption on you that you're going to fall into one camp and you're like, whoa, hold on, I do back?
Yep. Well, I think that's part of the nuance also of my earlier message is that I can only take care of my own self, right? And I can lead by example. And that being said, you know, I would say I've changed my thoughts a lot from, you could even say 10 years ago. And I think it's important for people to know that you're allowed to change your mind. You're allowed to be changed as a person, especially politically, right? You don't have to just, because I'm a registered Democrat, here we have Democrat and Republican, right? Just because I'm a registered Democrat doesn't mean that I agree with the party or I might want to change parties. So, and also with the trans community, I'm on the outside of it now. They do not like me. I'm an elder. I transitioned 32 years ago. And they are so mean and disrespectful to me because I have a different opinion. So that says to me, oh, you're not a community. You have become, I don't want to say cult, but cult-like. And they have become very much this way that if you don't sort of toe our party line, you are not part of us. And that's where the politics also for me lies in this very horrible space. You're either right or left. There is no nuance. And that's why political parties are different, are difficult for me because I don't agree with everything my party and I don't agree with the other party. So I think, again, it's important. My message, again, is important that I'm an individual who has individual beliefs and a way that I want to live my my life. And I think it's important for us all to get to that space. And we're not. We're in a space that you either have to pick a side or you're a bad person.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Collective thinking has become the norm. And that certainly got amplified, I think, during the COVID crisis. Did you, you were in California. I mean, you had measures much akin to us here. I really found it quite stunning at how readily Kiwis were prepared just to fall in line. Did you get that feeling when you were in California, when everything was
gone? Of course. I think the whole world did, to be honest with you. Now, that being said, because people get scared, you know, it's called scare tactics. It's what they did also in the trans community. They scared people to say, oh, if you don't transition your child, they're going to off themselves. That is a scare tactic, which is not true. And it's the same with COVID. They got everyone scared about it. You know, again, I have a child. We got scared to send our kid to school. They put this whole situation. It really ruined children. It just destroyed them. But I think that is how they get people on board. And that's really the scary part about governments on some level. Sometimes they again use these tactics that are, if you don't do this, you're going to be a bad person, or you're all going to die of COVID and you all got to get 500 shots or else you're not going to be able to participate in this situation. So yeah, we all fell in line, including me. I got three shots because I became fearful.
Yeah. Fear is an incredible motivator. Yes. And it's an incredible motivator. And it's interesting how you touched on it, that they've used this fear across both with kids. And I think kids have become a battleground with this. And I look at the whole trans ideology, and it's the ideology, right?
Yes.
It's this mind virus that they are absolutely terrifying our children with. I've got two teenage sons, and how do you then, as a parent, I mean, how did you navigate this as a parent to keep your kid grounded with and sift through all the stuff that they're having to navigate every day? It's a real mission. Yeah.
You know, for me, I've always come to it in a way that I'm super honest with my kid and whatever that means, right? And I learned that I don't bring stuff up unless my kid asks, right? So a lot of people ask me, well, does your child know you're transsexual? No, he doesn't. And why doesn't he know? Because I don't live as a trans person. I live as a man. What I told you earlier, I had what we used to call sex change, right? It's not possible. But I transitioned to live my life as a man. I did not transition to live my life as a transsexual person. And so my child doesn't need to know that I'm trans until he gets old enough to either figure out who I am or ask me the question, or it just becomes a conversation later on at life because it's an adult conversation. So the same comes with COVID. The same comes with all kinds of things. I navigate with my child that says truth matters. And if you ask me something, I'm going to be honest about it, okay? Unless it's a serious adult subject, like maybe something sexual or something like that, I'll be like, dude, we're going to talk about that maybe in a couple more years. But I really do think parenting is a gift, and it's something that I have huge amounts of gratitude as I get kind of choked up about it because it is. And I'm responsible for this little kid, right? I'm responsible for him to grow up to be a really badass, excuse me the language, person and be able to navigate the world with confidence and with his feet stuck in the ground and not feel wavered. So I think a lot of times when we get told that if you don't do this to your child, you are a bad person. That is disingenuous from a group of people. And again, I'm using the trans thing, right? Where if you don't transition your child, you're a bad person. That is sick to even say, because what's a parent going to do? If you tell your parent, any parent, I don't care what it is, if you tell them, if you don't do X, Y, and Z, the child will off themselves. Any parent is going to do whatever they can do to make sure that child, that is disingenuous and that is wrong. And you're putting a parent in a very sort of difficult situation there to navigate that.
Honestly, there's so many things I want to unpick in just a little bit. I think the first place that we're going to go is with parents. One of the things I've certainly noticed, like I mentioned to you before we got started, I come from the hand knitting world, which I blew your mind. You weren't aware it was the woke cesspit. It's actually one of the OG woke cesspits of the culture wars. And so I've been at this for many, many years. And one of the things that I've noticed is the number of women who got very sucked into the Church of Woke, and then also with that came the Church of Trans. And I know of, I'm aware of at least five sets of knitting parents that that used to come to in my event, shop at my store, that are all transitioning or claim to have trans children. Now, is this natural? Is this social contagion? Is this Munchausen's by proxy? What is it, Buck?
I'd say all of the above. Seriously, it's ideology, number one. Okay. Number one, it's ideology, because how can I remember how many years I transitioned? It matters how long I transitioned. I transitioned as a 30-year-old. I've been 32 years transitioned or at this point. What is happening? That was never on the table. We never talked about trans kids ever. They never existed before. I was not a trans kid. I was a tomboy. I dealt with things that all little girls and little boys deal with, always navigating gender. Gender is a thing that kids navigate, right? They want to look this way. They want to look that way. It's very normal behavior. It has nothing to do with gender dysphoria. Also, how would a kid even understand that unless they go through puberty, right? You don't understand what a boy or what a man and a woman is until you actually start to go through that space. So when they want to block puberty, I'm like, well, you're not even giving this kid a chance to even figure out who they are. So to me, it is 100% an ideology. And I'll tell you that no child should ever transition. Okay. There might be one out of 500 million that, but I don't even want to say that. I'm saying on a blanket statement, not even. So I do believe it's an ideology. Secondly, I think it's really sad that parents get sucked into it without doing their research. But then on the other side, I don't think that they're given the appropriate research. But then do you want, and again, number three, I think Munchausen, I 100% believe that because they're all on the internet. They're on the internet showing their kids. Like, look at my trans kid. Who does that? Who would actually put their kid on the internet and say, woohoo, I'm a trans parent. And I have to, that just feels so Munchausen to me.
Yeah, well, I interview Josh Slocum from Disaffected. I don't know whether you know Josh. He's great. And he talks about all of this through the lens of cluster B personality disorders. And, you know, there's a lot of narcissism rolled up in that as well. And as you said, that virtue signaling and the ideology, virtue signaling is very much one of the great pillars of the ideology. I mean, you're in California. I mean, that was already built in to the place to begin with. So, you know, you throw some woke on the fire. I mean, it must send it through the roof, surely.
Oh my God, we have so many trans parents here, and especially in Hollywood, all the Hollywood people having their trans kids and their non-binary. Look, I don't care about non-binary. That's just an identity choice. That's all that is. It's like androgyny or, you know, emo or what other things.
Oh, Annie Lennox was doing it in the 80s, darling. You know?
That's right. There you go, friend. So that being said, I just am so disgusted that we would throw children on the fire like this with, I can show you so much research that shows this does not work. It's all coming out though. I'm pretty sure you know that. CAS report, WPATH, the World Professional Association is getting nailed because they lied about everything. And so if it really is solid, why are you lying about it, right? Like you don't have to lie about, I don't have to lie that I'm a biological female in order for you to respect me as a male on some level. Because when you come to things with truth, then people just really appreciate that. But when you come to things with lies or you build your house on a false foundation, it will crumble. And that's what's happening now. The trans thing is crumbling. But here's the thing we all must think about. what about these poor young kids that were put in this position and are now going to suffer from people using it as a political football?
Well, you were one of the original. I mean, you were unusual. You were a unicorn back in the day because you were female to male transition. It was all in the other direction.
Yes.
So you must look now. I mean, there's been in the last, what, 4 or 5 years, this massive needle shift to female to male transitions. This has got to be a social contagion.
100% it is. And there's no doubt about it in my mind, because if that was the case, if it wasn't the case, it would be even. We'd have just as many boys wanting to be girls as girls wanting to be boys. Now, that being said, it's different to go through puberty as a girl. You and I both know that. We can understand it's different. You start showing things, you start dealing with, you know, periods and boobs and feelings and all kinds of stuff happening. And there's a lot of trauma attached to these young girls, as we know. It's an actually trauma-based thing that's happening, and they don't want to be girls because they get sexualized, or there's things that happen to them. And there was a 4,000% increase of young girls claiming to be trans. That's ridiculous.
Well, it's, you know, being a teenager sucks at the best of times. It sucked for me in the 80s and probably sucked for you in the 70s. It's not easy. And all of a sudden, teenagers are not allowed to go through really what is a rite of passage. I mean, it's something that you've got to just plow on through and endure and learn. But instead, they're lured, I think, by so much that they see in front of and on screens. Screens went around in my day, in your day. How do you, I mean, you're a dad now. How do you look at that and navigate that with your own child in terms of exposure to what they can see either at school or on a screen or on TV? I mean, how do you navigate that?
Well, I'm pretty hardcore, I'll be honest with you. Like, I'm cool with him playing video games, you know, like PlayStation and Xbox and all that, because that feels a little more controlled on some level. And also, like I told you earlier, I created a relationship with him of honesty and trust. And so when I say, okay, what's going on Discord? What's going on here? Is it private? I feel very secure that he's always being honest with me. And I tell him about gross people on the internet. And I talk to him about predators. And I say, these people do these kinds of things. And if you feel in any way uncomfortable, you come to me. And, you know, I put it in the context of when I was a kid and we had like a van with no windows. Those were the bad people that would roll up and snatch you as a kid. So I always say, dude, the van with no windows, those people are on the internet now. And so he understands it. And I go, teachers can be that way. The grocery store guy can be that way. The neighbor can be that way. If you ever feel uncomfortable, you must come. So, and also, he's not on social media. We will not let him on social media in any way. He's like, can I just be on TikTok? I'm like, dude, of all of the social media apps, that's at the top of the list of a big no. So, you know, I think really, that's what parenting is about, saying no. It's not always about saying yes.
Yeah, it's two things. One, saying the no. I had interviewed last week one of our other co-hosts, actually. She works in the space of self-empowerment, and she has two things that she talks about. One is she talks about the breakdown before the breakthrough. That is a real central tenet of what she has. And so she sees a lot of what's going on. Sometimes things need to get worse before they get better. And you can apply that to so many things, like being a teenager. Yeah, it's awful. And yes, these periods are awful, and the cramps are awful, and the pimples are awful. And yeah, the boobs, yeah, they're going to hurt, and they're going to get bigger. And, you know, it's got to get worse before it gets better. Breakdown before the breakthrough. But the other is that power of the no. I think as parents, we've been conditioned to compromise ourselves into oblivion and actually forget that boundaries have to be set. And sometimes no just means no.
That's right.
No caveats, no clauses, no but whys.
Nope.
Just no.
Yep. And you know, it's worked. When I say no, doesn't even ask, doesn't even question, just goes away, does something else. So, and also I want to sort of piggyback on that, and that I think it is important to create those boundaries with children. And I think it is important that you are the hierarchy. It's like a pack of dogs. There's always the leader of the pack for a reason. There always has to be a leader of the pack. And I think kids are always looking. Kids don't do well without any kind of boundaries, and they don't do well without parents parenting. And what I mean by that is creating goes. I'm the parent, you're the child. What I say goes. I don't care if you like it or not. That's just how it works. And I think they understand that in a way that makes them feel safer. And I think when you don't create those boundaries, I really think that's why a lot of kids who have these Munchausen crazy parents, I think that they're not having any boundaries and they're getting away with stuff. And they're the kids, you and I both know, kids will push and push until they can't push anymore. So if you don't have any boundaries, when is the end of it? And where are they going to start to learn that you can't have everything you want?
No, isn't that the crux of it? You can't have everything you want.
Yep. That's right.
Yeah. One of my sons, bless him, when he was younger, he's 16 now and he's utterly fabulous. But when he was younger, it was always, Mum, can I have? Mum, can I have? Mum, I need this. Mum, can I have? And then he'd get grumpy. And then I just would start playing the Rolling Stones, you get satisfaction.
Excellent.
And I just keep doing that until he stopped asking. We needed to move through that space. It's like, dude, this is not going to happen every single time. But these kids are led to believe that they live in a world without boundaries. Thank you, postmodernism, that they live in a world where they can be or do anything that they want without any repercussions. What are your thoughts around that?
Well, not only kids. Adults are acting that way now. Adults don't even have boundaries. And adults think they can, like I said earlier, I'm not going to tell you how to believe or what to do. If you don't want to consider me male, I have no issue with that because I'm actually not. But I think you do it out of respect. And so to get respect, you have to give respect. So I think the other thing is we're not teaching children about respect. So that being said, I get nailed by a young generation of trans kids, right? When I say, hey, wait a minute here, you can't talk to me like that. Oh, shut up. You're old. Sit down, you know, like I'm like, what? Who would ever talk to a person who sort of on some level led the way and really did a lot of work to get the transsexual world out there and for people to respect us? So I think the problem is that social media, really, I am going to blame social media for a lot of this. And I do what you said earlier, social contagion. And I think there's no boundaries in social media, right? People can just say things and run away and come back and say it again, where you could never do that in person. That's why where you and I came from is a blessing, because we had to say it to each other's face. So you had to sit with it for a minute and say, am I willing to say it to your face, or am I just going to eat it and walk away? But these kids don't even have to eat it anymore. They can just say it.
Yeah, well, I was actually listening to an interview last night with Jonathan Haidt, who, of course, wrote The Coddling of the American Mind, who I'd desperately like to get on. And now that he's finished his book, I think I might have a run at it. But he was talking about his new book, which its title escapes me at the moment. But in his new book, he was talking about one of the aspects with these kids, of course, with screen time, is that they're separated from their peers, like exactly like you said. One of the things I've done with our boys is I actively encourage in-person time with all their friend group. And my two are very close together in age. So the friend group is, there's a huge crossover. It's like the Venn diagram of the double bubble, you know, big crossover. Our house is open plan, you know, the kids can come and go because boys like to banter and boys need to banter and josh that stuff off each other. And if they lose that through a screen or through Discord or through whatever, they lose that nuance. And my oldest has got autism. He has to learn that again and again and again. This does not come naturally to him, and he's certainly not going to learn it through a digital device.
No, and you bring up autism. As you know, many of the trans kids are autistic, and I talk about it a lot on my channel. And that being said, I don't believe they're trans. I think we know, you know a lot about autism, and I'm learning a lot about it. It's a very sort of black and white space, and kids have to navigate this thing. And if they're told this, then they're going to easily get sucked into it. And that's why I think a lot of these new trans kids are autistic, because they're looking for this thing that makes them feel a part of. And it just fascinates me that people can't. I'm like, can't you just see it? It's right there in front of our faces. Why these kids? Because again, they're screen time. They're not out socializing. My kid, we have them in soccer. Same with us. We have kids over. We do play dates. We're constantly, you can't do the PlayStation because it's sunny and nice outside and we're going to go to the park. And, you know, we make a huge effort to, again, it comes back to parents. I am going to say that it does. You know, you've got to make an effort and not be just giving them the phone and the iPad and the PlayStation and not willing to take 2 hours out of your life for the day to go over to the park and, you know, make have friends, because they need FaceTime. They need actual human FaceTime in order to be better people and to also function in the world. If you're not having FaceTime with people, you won't be able to function in the world properly.
No. And it's, oh, and there are so many different sort of battlegrounds that we fight with these kids. So one for you that actually I'd love to get your thoughts on, because you've got a son. Mm-hmm. How do you then teach positive masculinity when masculinity has been poisoned absolutely systemically for the last 5 to 10 years?
Oh my God, and now I'm the bad one, right? Because I'm the white man back here.
Dive in.
Oh my God, it's hilarious. Well, I mean, first off, let's talk about nature versus nurture, because nature is real. He's a little boy, and that is just that. I don't care what anybody says. That kid is just a little boy, and I didn't do anything to encourage that. He is just a little boy. But what I do is I think lead by example. Like I continue to tell you, leading by example is very important to me. So what I let him see is important, right? And I'm not going to tell you that I haven't had little anger attacks or haven't, but one of the things his mother and I do is we make sure that we never argue in front of him and we never make fights in front of him. If we're going to have our little spat or little thing, we make sure that we go in the other room or that he never hears it, because I don't want him to have this idea that men are bad, this angry dude towards women. And, you know, and I always make sure that he sees I have huge respect for women and that women are important and that, you know, moms are the best thing in the world. And I think also that men are not bad. I think that message somehow that got out there, the patriarchy, white man, colonization, it's all men's faults. And it's so dangerous. And, you know, I'm kind of a macho dude. I mean, I'm not sound like it, but I'm this guy who goes to the gym and, you know, really is into sports. And I think not that that makes you male, but I think also giving him this sort of way of being sensitive as a man, but also a man on some level. But I want to let you know that he's my adopted son and that his actual biological father is also in our life. It's my wife's ex-husband, and we have the most amazing family. We're like a three-way family, and he joins us with everything, and his dad is always a part of the situation, and we show that there's never any negativity around that. And I think that has also been huge. People are always so shocked. They're like, what? Oh yeah, me and his dad are like best friends, and we make sure that he never sees any negativity around sort of maleness or the divorce, if that makes sense.
Oh, now, that's very California of you, darling.
Right on.
But isn't that wonderful, though? Because, you know, I think it is about the kids. When you're raising kids,
right,
it's very much about the kids. I know the thing at the forefront for my husband and I when we were raising our son. So we knew that things were with him a little bit off-piste by the time he was two. So stuff was like, okay. And we got his first diagnosis at 3, then he got the full, he's got bells and whistles, and that all came by 6, but high functioning. So we were told, we had a wonderful neuropediatrician. She read, and a team around that. And she was able to sort of say, look, you know, if you put the work in, there's absolutely no reason why he's just not going to be completely normal, but it's going to take work. And that's what we did. And we were aware of the importance of the family unit, because 80% of parents in our situation ended up in divorce. And we didn't want that. 80% of parents who have a child on the spectrum end up in divorce.
Wow. Why is that? Do you know?
I think it's because it is really tough. Those early days, and I mean, if anyone out there has got a kid on the spectrum, and like when he was diagnosed, it was probably definitely the 1 in 100 zone. Okay. I think it's now something like 1 in 30, and we're not even going to go down that rabbit hole. And before people say to me in this channel, because of the space that we live in, for my son, it was genetics. So,
okay.
So that's where we, you know, dad has got a toe on the spectrum, granddad's there, and uncles are there. So anyway, we knew what we were, my husband didn't put the pieces quite together the same way I did, but we got there.
Right.
And it's tough. It is really super tough. I mean, it's tough being a parent of any child.
Totally.
And then you throw in the dynamic of a child with needs. And so you have to parent slightly differently between the two children. There's no way around it. Mm-hmm. And then all the social pressures and mores and things that get thrown on you from the school, the system, what other parents and people think, trying to navigate work and life. And it is tough.
Right. And I get that. But I get why that happens. You know, that happens a lot with women who get breast cancer or some kind of cancer. A lot of times their partner leaves them. And I'm always so shocked to hear that, because I always think when there's something happening like that, don't you think that the partner needs you more than ever? It's the last thing you should think about is leaving during that. So I always wonder what's going through people's heads, especially, and you know, during this trans thing, same thing. There's a lot of divorces happening because one parent wants to transition the child and the other parent doesn't, which creates that schism there. And then, you know, here in California and a couple other states, we have what's called a trans sanctuary state, where the one parent who wants to transition the kid, if they can't do it in that state, they can leave and come to California and be safe here and not have to give the parent, the child back to the other parent. It's completely out of control. So on some level, I see a sort of similarity there between this and that. It's breaking up families.
Oh, it is. It is. And with the autism thing, like you were saying, you were just learning stuff with autism in this space. I mean, I was, what is it, something like 25% or a third? It's a massive number.
Yes.
They're massively overrepresented in this space.
That's right.
And you're right, the biggest thing I can tell you is a sense of belonging. Because when you're that, there's a reason why with autism they use the jigsaw puzzle piece as their symbol, because they're trying to find where they fit in. And I have to admit, that whole community, sort of cult-like community that has been created with the modern trans movement, must be incredibly enticing and intoxicating if you're a young autistic teen.
Oh no, totally. I see all the kids on TikTok. They all say they have autism, or the other one is, I think it's DID, dissociative. Not that they're the same thing, but again, a sort of disorder space. And they're all sort of wanting to be it's a belonging thing. It's 100% a belonging thing. And that's normal for kids. They want to belong in groups. Remember when I was a kid, it was the nerds and the jocks and these type of people. And you always wanted to belong to these groups. And you never were taught that you can be an individual. I don't think we teach kids about being individuals. But again, I think humans are tribal sort of people, are they not? They want to be part of a tribe.
Yeah. Hey, now, look, I want to pivot a little bit. I saw the other day that you spoke with Scott Nugent. And Scott was one of my first interviews when I started with the station. Bless him. Great. And he had, he has been through hell and back with his transition and the medical side of things. 30 years ago, they were pretty much making this up as they were going along for
That's
you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the things in that 30 years? I mean, you obviously didn't know stuff back then, so you were taking a leap of faith. So what are some of the things that they're not putting on the box? They're not telling these kids now. What would you tell a 13-year-old kid now who's wanting to sort of start down this pathway? And I'm not, and outside of the whole psychological, don't do it, we've covered that, but that whole, this is not, if you were to go to a trans medicine specialist, this is what they're not going to tell you.
Great, great question, actually. So what they're not going to tell you is it's a commitment. There is no turning back. So what you see is what you get. And so even if you change your mind in 5 years, you're never going to go back to what you physically looked like or whatever's going on with you right now. So you cannot change your mind. Okay. They're not telling you that, which my doctor did tell me that, by the way. He said, you can't change your mind. This is something, but at 30, I can make that choice. At 13, I would also say, hold on, my friend, you don't know in 2 years, you know, you might like chocolate Hershey's chocolate bars this year, and next year you might hate them as an actual real thing. So I you know, I hate to sort of belittle a young person, but at the same time, I like to tell them, like, my God, you're just learning so much right now. Why don't you participate in all kinds of things? Go play soccer, go play baseball. Then you're going to find your space and what you really like to do, because you're not going to be able to figure out what you like to do if you just make that hard choice. The number one thing I tell a lot of these young people is you can't turn back. I don't care what you say. I don't care what anybody is telling you or not. You cannot turn back. And that's all I want you to do. Sit with it for a year. Because most of the time when they sit with it for just a tiny little bit of time, they change their mind. But it's the rush of it that scares me. And especially these medical associations and these, I'm doing the quote signs, medical professionals. Why are they in a rush? You know, when I did it, this was the last resort. So the last resort meaning medical. The first resort is what you said, mental health, and then getting them through this mental space, right? And this was always after 2 to 3 years of therapy. Then if you were still sort of thinking about this, you could maybe start taking the medical route. They've literally flipped it. They're rushing these kids into what we call, right, top surgery, where they're removing breasts of – they are removing breasts of 13-year-olds, by the way. Don't let anybody tell you they aren't. They actually are doing that. And so – I think just really basically saying to them that you can't turn back. Are you sure you really want to make this choice? Because look at me. And I could show them pictures of me before and now, and it always blows their mind. It always makes them go, whoa.
Yeah. So do you worry about, I mean, you've been on what, testosterone now for what, 30 odd years?
Yes, 32 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a commitment. I mean, you wouldn't be able to come off that now.
Nope.
I would have thought.
Nope, I can't come off it. Number one, it would actually really hurt my body. I haven't had a lot of health problems, I'll be honest with you, because I became sober from alcohol and drugs 38 years ago. So I'm super clean that way. I take a lot of care of my body. I work out. I do all these really, I eat well. I do all these great things to help myself because testosterone is horrifying. I have a female body and we have a small amount of testosterone, but the amount I put in my body is not... it's not, you know, native to my body. And so that being said, it caused what was called vaginal atrophy. And I was the first recorded case of that. Not that I'm proud of it, but because the doctors didn't understand what was happening. And my uterus and my cervix fused together, created a horrible infection that nobody could figure out. And because what happens is basically I went through early menopause and they couldn't figure it out. I kept cramping and they're like, well, we don't know what's wrong with you until the infection popped and I got septic. And as you all probably know, septic means you're going to die. So I almost died from this situation. And so these are the things they're not telling these young people. They're not telling them that you can get vaginal atrophy, that, you know, it can kill you, that there's... So the thing that I want people to understand is I made this commitment and I'm going to stay with it because it does help me. And I probably is going to shorten my life. But for me, it was the quality of my life, and the quality of my life changed dramatically from this situation. But I do not believe, I don't even think a 20-year-old can make this choice. I'll be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think it is a very, very difficult space to understand unless you've lived a little bit of life first.
And isn't it interesting that you say that? Like, I know that Andrew Doyle in the UK, mm-hmm. Because of course the CAS report has come out on the back of the WPATH files leak. So you had WPATH in the US, and it was just so fortuitous that CAS dropped when it did, because I interviewed Mia Hughes and I said to her, mm-hmm. were you aware of CAS coming out? And she said, no, it just fact that it landed so soon after was great, because you had, you know, two Anglosphere countries who, you know, had this wealth and dearth of information.
That's right.
Which was wonderful.
Yeah.
But then in the UK, they've had some positives in the sense in the NHS, they've been able to roll things out, but private clinics have now popped up. And Andrew Doyle talks about, with all the hate speech laws and stuff now that they're rolling out over there, that you now have these anti-conversion laws and these hate speech laws with, if you're talking about anyone in the trans space, when he said really, what is it, something like 80% of boys grow up to actually just be gay? They're just figuring out their sexuality. So isn't that in a way homosexual conversion, trans
therapy? I say it all the time. It's homophobia in a bottle. There you go. It's literally wiping out gay kids. It is. And if you really just step back, it sounds so crazy, but it's literally conversion therapy. It is on some level, because you're right. It's like 80% of these kids end up being gay when they get older. But of course, we don't talk about gay kids, right? But here's the situation that people don't understand. So let's just say a kid wants to experiment sexually. That's very normal. It is so normal to experiment sexually. You can't even say anything about that. It just is. It doesn't mean you're gay. It doesn't mean anything. Just mean kids, you know, and when I say kids, I mean 15, 16 years old or whatever, you know, you do, but there's no harm in it, right? There's harm when you start putting hormones in a child's body. There's harm when you start doing surgery to a child's body. That's the thing that I'm just blown away by, that they would want to sort of push this. It's an anti-gay agenda. And I'm telling you that as a transsexual, it's an anti-gay agenda, because why would anyone ever want to do this to children? It blows my mind.
Yeah. So have you seen any effect from the release of both those reports and files in the space, you know, in the US, or has it been a case of willful blindness and the ideology sort of keeps them, the doctrine keeps them here, and they're never going to even look at any evidence from a contrary point of view?
Well, the trans community here in America will not even acknowledge it. It's why I'm a person like myself is on the outs, but I won't shut up. And I do have a lot of power. They know that. It's why they try to shut me down, because I do have power and I won't shut up. I have 32 years. You can't take that away from me, right? And so they're like, oh, okay, Buck is somebody who we could actually, that being said, the trans community is like, don't listen to Buck. Don't listen to, and like, people are listening to me. I don't really care what you all say. That being said, yes, willful blindness, 100%. There's money attached to it. Let's just I'll be honest here. It is a hugely financial beneficial situation for many people. That's why I'm so disgusted in it. Disgusted in doctors who would operate on a 14-year-old or a 13-year-old little girl who barely even has boobs. And doing that those doctors need to be put in prison. I'm not even kidding you. There is no way in heck that we should ever be touching a child's body unless it has a serious problem. This is a mental problem. Why are we not teaching the kids that, oh, you'll be fine. Just get through this little humpy space right here and everything's going to be fine. On top of that, I live in California, which is insane. And we have the children's hospital where that doctor who represents trans kids puts kids on puberty blockers at 6 years old. And I just, you know, puberty blockers are off label. They're not even made for what they're using them for. That's the thing that is so absurd. But little by little, it's getting out. And little by little, things like the New York Times are finally coming around and they're not so woke, and major publications are starting to speak about it, and the CAST report is getting leaked out, and the American, just today I think it was the American, Plastic Surgery Association just came out and said they do not endorse trans surgeries for minors. So that's actually a step in the right direction.
Well, I mean, have the lawsuits started? Because that generally is the way that you resolve things in the United States, is you sue the living shit out of somebody. That started?
Oh yeah, we got like five. I'm all there for them. I will testify for them, everything. We got like five major lawsuits happening. And you know, hate to say it, but you brought a trans community, I'm talking to you, you brought this on. You brought this on when you brought kids into this. And I told you, leave the kids alone. Back in the day when in the whole gay space in the 80s, they tried to bring kids into it then. And we were like, get kids away from us. We don't want kids. When you bring kids into anything that is on a marginalized space, like deals with sexuality or gender, you're asking for problems. So, you know, I'm blaming the trans activists and those people who sort of brought these children into this space. It's their, that's why things are going to roll back. And that's why even laws that I fought to get changed are going to roll back and not. And, you know, I'm sorry, but sometimes that's what happens when you're disingenuous.
Well, as I mentioned before, as Natalie said, sometimes things need to break down before you can break through. And that breakdown is definitely coming, I think, with a lot of the detransitioning stories now. And more of those are starting to come out. And Scott, man, you know, such a warrior in that space for so long, and whilst fighting tremendous health challenges themselves. Yeah. Like, one of the things I asked Scott back, I mean, this is 18 months ago I spoke to Scott, was did Scott ever feel like reclaiming Kelly? And he said no. He said, as you said, it's a commitment.
That's right. That's, I love Scott. Me and him, we call ourselves brothers. I care about that guy. He is very important to me. What they did to him is disgusting. I think he probably told you that the doctor who did that in lawsuits moved to another state, Texas, and opened a clinic again. How is that legal? But it's all based on money. That is the thing that is so, you know, I am about capitalism. Don't get me wrong. I believe in it. But what I don't believe is abusing a system, right? I wouldn't be able to create my own products and my own space and my businesses if it wasn't for capitalism. But, you know, it just got out of control. And then these people took advantage of the situation. And how dare a doctor, when a doctor loses his license in one state, they should lose it all across the world. They should never be able to do what they did to Scott. And, you know, Scott's not the only one. I'm sure you know that. Many trans men who had that surgery are suffering from it. It doesn't work.
Oh, is the phalloplasty?
That's right. The phalloplasty.
Yeah, it is just so insane. And again, those are the things that they're not telling these kids. I mean, what the kids are seeing are these TikTok videos and stuff of these ones showing off these scars. And it's like, you know, where I'm getting ready to go into it. And I'm just like, okay, so have you then also in your due diligence spoken to or looked at videos of someone like Scott talking about repeated infections because they haven't done electrolysis correctly or they haven't done a million and one things. And, you know, the health effects of living on antibiotics and steroids and everything else to try and just get you out of bed in a day.
Oh, no, that poor guy is suffering. And no, of course not. They tell them to stay away from me and Scott. They tell them, don't look at us. We're transphobic. We're this, we're that. You know, so that, again, tells me that they don't care about these young people. They have an agenda. They're using these kids to create, it's adults who have started all this and they're using the kids to sort of do the dirty work on some level. So they use the kids to experiment with and they don't care once they're done and then they're like no part of the community anymore. That's why detransitioners get kicked to the side. They're not part of the community anymore. I'm like, what? You sure celebrated them last 2 years and they were transitioning. The minute they don't, you're like kicking them to the curb. That is sick. That's very cult-like, as you know. When you leave the cult, you are a bad person. It's the same thing.
Well, and they've also been medically depersoned because detransition, they don't have a code because everything in the US system works on medical codes. So if you can't be categorized, you almost don't exist. So that in itself becomes a real issue, doesn't it?
I'm at a loss for words because I just can't even imagine treating a human like that. You know, you guys talked that person into it. You were like on TikTok, trans joy. This is the best thing I ever did. And then when someone decided that they wanted to do what you did and they followed you, now they're a bad person because they were never trans. That's what I'm telling you. I'm going to tell you 90%, if not more, of these young kids who are claiming to be trans are not. They're dealing with trauma. They're dealing with stuff. I'm just seeing, you know, in my old tranny eyes, I see such a horrible thing happening in the next 5 to 10 years that it's going to be, me and you are going to be saying, we were telling you. We were all, I mean, it's not a place I want to be in. I don't want to be, I was telling you. I want to be in a space that says, oh my God, they listened and none of these kids got hurt, because it's going to be so disgusting what we're going to have to deal with in the next 5 to 10 years of these young people who did surgery and remove their breasts, and maybe they want to be mothers now, and they're just not going to be able to do that.
I think it's already started. You did a reaction video a while ago, and you were looking at some of these Muppets. There's no other way to put it. Absolute Muppets, who were, offering best advice for these trans kids. And you talk about, you know, in the fact that don't necessarily listen to you, but listen to an expert. But where do they find an expert that isn't seeped in the ideology? Because sometimes that's what happened to Scott. It was the experts that sent him down that pathway. So where do you find good, solid advice that isn't seeped in just this poison?
Yeah, that's a great question as well. So here in America, we have something called Planned Parenthood, which I'm so after. They're disgusting. And they also got sucked into the whole gender-affirming care crap. And you can walk into one of these clinics without any parental guidance or even your parents knowing. Can you imagine? And walk out in an hour with testosterone and you're on your way. So I'm first off, don't ever. So I tell the kids, First off, never start there. Secondly, there's therapy groups that are starting now that are really great. And they're not, I also say, do not go to a therapist that claims to be gender affirming, because that is not a therapist. Mm. That's somebody who's literally going to affirm you saying you're an animal. And I'm like, why are you affirming these kids who say they're cats and dogs? It's actually a mental illness. So there's all these great new therapy groups. One's called, I think, therapyfirst.org, I think it is. And they're amazing. And so I really try to push the kids towards mental health care. And that I'm huge. That's like my number one thing, is creating a space for these kids to just get into somebody to talk to. You can't talk to your parents about this. I get it. Well, I was there. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But you can talk to somebody who might be able to help you walk through this. And it might not be that you're trans. It might be other things going on with you. You know, really talking to kids at their level is really important, I think. And not that I'm better than you, or not that I really come to them as a sort of what the kids call me, a trampa. And sort of like, I'm just your grandpa. Let me just tell you, I lived a life, kiddo. Calm down here. Sit on my lap on the chair and we'll talk about this, and I'll send you to this direction here. And really getting into a level. My partner taught me that. Get on the kids' level. And once you get on the kids' level, they trust you more. So I think leading kids down a space that says, don't listen to your friends. Your friends don't necessarily know what's going on. Listen to this situation, and I can send you to where you can go talk to somebody privately without your parents around, and not a gender-affirming therapist. Those people they're scammers. They're snake oil salesmen.
Oh, well, look, affirmation and medical care. What an absolute oxymoron that is.
I mean, how is that even possible to have affirmation and in 1 hour you're trans? It took me years to figure out where I was going.
Imagine if they had affirmation in the anorexia space in the 90s when all the kids were following that.
Great point. Excellent point. That's right.
You know, I just find that absolutely, but then that comes back to rediscovering the no, isn't it?
That's
why you have no, you know, no's.
You've got because that's why they created that, because they created all these spaces where kids can be like, well, okay, well, screw you. I'm going to go to Planned Parenthood. I don't need my parents. They call that, informed consent. You think a 15-year-old can inform consent, so they get a paper that says you understand what you're doing, that you can't hold Planned Parenthood liable, like, this is what's going to happen to you, and they don't tell you all the things I told you is going to happen to you, and then you sign it, and then you can go right ahead and get your testosterone prescription. So informed consent is also part of the whole ideology.
The conformed consent, I mean, I'm my husband is a former doctor, he's left medicine now, but he's actually walked away. He has got to it. The corona crisis taught him that medicine is not the place that he thought it was. And informed consent was one of those pillars that just got completely imploded for him, because, I mean, it's drummed into him. I mean, he's in his mid-50s, so it's drummed into him that informed consent, along with do no harm, in terms of the oath that you take. And apparently they don't take the oath anymore in a lot of places. Yeah,
well, you can see it. Yeah, you can see it. When you're operating on a 13-year-old who doesn't have boobs, but you're pretending she does, then definitely do no harm has been taken out of that conversation.
Out of the equation. And so the COVID crisis, with an informed consent perspective, and here in New Zealand, we had a lot of vaccination mandates. So when you're taking away a free person's agency to make their own medical decisions based on the supposed greater good of the collective, which is what happened, erodes that entire principle, doesn't it? And then you saw this, I mean, even though the trans stuff was bubbling along simultaneously, it really exploded.
Well, COVID, I do hold COVID a lot responsible, especially the mandates of staying at home, the masks, especially for the children. Adults did get a little bit messed up from it, but the kids got destroyed from it. And I do blame COVID. That's when the trans thing just started to go on the rise. And, you know, I talked to my kid about it. Did you hate, you know, I want to know like how he felt. He said that he hated it, having to go to school with masks, and everybody was always getting sick, and he got fearful from that. And I think it really did affect our kids that we won't really understand, I think, even the outcome of that for another years beyond this. I think that, that's why the trans thing took off. You can just put them, plug them in together. It really was a sort of way to manipulate the kids' minds.
Yeah, and then you take informed consent out because there isn't any, and then you've got two groups of people, ones that don't trust anything, which is now the place that I live in, and then you've got those that trust everything will continue to trust until probably the day that either their child or themselves goes to the grave.
Oh my God. I know. I hear you, friend. I'm trying not to go all the way on those sides, but it's difficult. How can you not? How can I trust anything what's going on right now when they do? I'm really kid focused, if you can tell. I really am, because I just feel so mad that adults are acting so insanely disingenuous to children. You can't change your sex. So when we're telling a 13-year-old girl that she can become a boy, and then what happens when she becomes 25 and she doesn't have a penis and she goes to, or even 18 and goes to high school and running around with the boys and she thinks she's a boy, but she's not a boy. And then her mental health is just going to be all, that's the thing that I'm really not understanding. They're not thinking of the long-term effects of these kids when you tell them you can become a boy. You can never become a boy or a man. That, so I know that at 30, right? Because you just know that. I know what I'm taking on. But when you start being so disingenuous to children like that, it just, I don't know what happened to our humanity, and I don't know what happened to our medical space.
And I mean, I do have a special sort of distrust for any parent that's there are the parents there that are struggling and they're trying to sort of find their way through this. I've spoken to many who've looked for advice, they've tried to counsel their children, but their children have been sucked into a group often through the school. So the school have superseded that parental consent.
That's right.
And the now state, I don't know what it's like in the US, but in this country, it's amazing the amount of power that the state can assert to destroy my parental consent, which really upsets me. So how do you then navigate? You know, and then you've got those parents that actually actively encourage it. So then you've got child that's never going to, if they have second thoughts, are never going to get that support, because at home you've got mum or dad, usually mum, who's so bought into it that they're going to go down with the ship.
That's right. That's such a great point. That happened here. A young trans kid off their mother because her mother wasn't accepting her. And I'm like, what? Now, this was like a 16-year-old boy to a girl who actually murder her parents because she wasn't being accepted. But also I'm hearing that from detransitioners. They were scared to tell their parents because they really begged their parents to do this. And then when they changed their mind, they were too scared to say anything to them. So there's parents who are also getting, you're right. You make great points there. What about the parents who are so sucked into it and the kid wants to change their mind and maybe the parent isn't going to let them do that? You see, it's so deep. It's deeper than I think any of us can even understand, the psychological damage on all. And I do believe it's really breaking families up. And I think here in America, I do think there's this agenda to break up families. I 100% believe that. Like, don't trust your parents. They say that. And in our school systems, what they're teaching kids, and now in California, we have a law where the teacher doesn't have to tell the parent if the kid is transitioning at school. I'm like, if my kid was transitioning at school, you better tell me. But that is a slippery slope on so many levels.
Oh, yeah, no, it's the same here as well. And enforced pronoun use. I have a thing about enforced pronoun use.
Totally. Like,
you know, it's kind of like the gateway drug into everything else. It just sets things off. But look, we could talk all morning, but I know that the time is getting away. Hey, look, if people are wanting to listened to you this morning, and I thought, oh, this is an absolute fresh wind for me. I haven't heard anything like this. Where can they get some of your content and consume some of the conversations you're having with people?
Well, first, thanks so much, everybody, for listening. Thanks for having me, my friend. I do appreciate it. And you can see my YouTube channel, which is at Buck Angel Official, where I do a lot of commentary. And then my website is buckangel.com. And then I'm on Instagram, Buck Angel. I'm on X, Buck Angel. And I am on TikTok. I'm sorry, but I'm there for the kids to sort of like push them the other way. But I appreciate you all so much for really listening to me and seeing a different opinion about what's going on.
No, look, it's been an utter joy. And thank you so much for spending some time this morning. This has been Buck Angel. And as I said, Buck's message is of empowerment through self-acceptance and the mission to encourage everyone to be comfortable in their own skin. Hey, thanks, Buck. I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, friend.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.